So we had that four of them before we got one of each gun.
Okay. Four VFs. So I'm going to, this is recording audio, just in case something happens with the video, so I have it.
Sure.
I'll leave it here. And so how I've been starting is just asking when you came to Cornell and how you came to Cornell, where you were
when I first came to Cornell, which is many, many years ago, that was 1950 as an undergraduate. But I stayed as far as my master's went. And then I went off to, what did I do? Oh, I got myself drafted. That's what happened.
Oh, really?
You were drafted in those days. It was 1955. And after that, I went back to Yale University to do linguistics. when I was in Yale, I started Yale after I got out of the Army in 1957. And 1959, Habe Yasin, who was a quite a well-known Indonesian literary critic, was at Yale. And he was studying with Rene Wellick. And so it happens that Habe Yasin speaks a language called Gorontalo from Sulawesi. And we had, of course, called Field Methods, where you take a language that people haven't studied and take it down. And Habe Yasin happens to be a speaker of Gorontalo, which I had no idea what it'd be like, but when I started working with him, first place, he's a very interesting person himself. He was a very interesting person. And the second place, the language was very fascinating. And so I asked my advisor if I could if I could write my dissertation on the Gorontalo language and use Mr. Yasin as my informant. That was all very fine. He said yes, but you have to learn all about Indonesia, and you got to do area studies, and you got to do Indonesian, and you got to learn the history of the Austronesian languages, and it's going to take at least another year.
So Did you know anything about Indonesia at that point?
Nothing. Not really. So I signed up for all that stuff, and they supported me, and I took a year of Indonesian, and then I took 1 year of Indonesian, and then my professor got us fellowship to go to Indonesia, and at that time there was Indonesian language instruction at Yale and at Cornell, and one summer it would be at Yale and the next summer it would be at Cornell, and the summer that he was going off after I had my 1 year was at Cornell, and he said, would you like to take my place at Cornell, because I can't stay, I have to go to Indonesia. As of course I did, but I didn't know very much Indonesian, but I had 1 year of Indonesian. But actually, it was quite lucky, because at the time, that year that I was taking Indonesian, I met this fellow named Mokhtar Naim, who had written his dissertation at McGill University. He was a Muslim scholar, and he actually became quite well known. And I met him at a party in November or December, sometime around then. And I just befriended him, and he didn't speak too much English. He just liked to speak Indonesian. And my Indonesian, actually, I had only 1 year of really very poor instruction in Indonesian, but I learned to speak quite a lot because of Mokhtar. And so I palled around with him. And then in the summer that I was supposed to be teaching Indonesian, I sort of joined the Indonesian community. I had a roommate. I had an apartment together with Apul Tobing, who was the brother of the person that was teaching Indonesian at Yale at the time. And I was really speaking an awful lot of Indonesian. I met a lot of interesting Indonesian people at that time. What do I say? What happened?
Was that the beginning of Siasi?
Long before Siasi, because we would change. 1 year would be Cornell, the next year would be Yale. Siasi, first, it was only Indonesian language instruction. And after a while, Ohio came. Was it Ohio? Bill Frederick.
Yeah, Bill Frederick, yeah.
Yeah, Ohio came into it, and they called it ISI, Indonesian Summer Studies Institute. And then they just people realize that there are other places in Southeast Asia besides Indonesia.
Yes.
And sort of gradually. But anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it was after that, sorry, after I got my, after I finished my graduate work and I was, I'd done my, I was going to go to Indonesia, but I didn't go because there was a revolution and lots of other things. So I went to the, my professor said, well, the languages in the Philippines are rather similar to Gorontalo, they're related, and why don't you take a language from there? So I ended up going to the Philippines, which is where my jodo, that was my jodo.
Oh, okay,
and that
sure,
was where I ended up getting married.
Yeah.
That's another story. So anyway, I had been doing Slavic linguistics, and I really thought that's where I would get a, find my employment. Mm-hmm. But as I was riding around, my Russian had sort of gone to the background. I was much more into the Philippine languages than the.
Interesting.
Yeah. I was riding around, and I wrote to Cornell, and I said, I can do. By the way, I can also do Philippine languages in Indonesia, and the head of the department. Or the acting head of the department at the time, Professor Hockett, wrote me back. He said, well, we do need somebody that's in charge, that knows about Indonesian, and would you like to apply? And of course, I applied, and luckily it was a time when there were very few people that were experts in Indonesian linguistics, and I got the job.
What year was that?
That was 19, I was married in 63. See, I got married, and then I thought I'd have to, I didn't know what I was going to do because I didn't have a job prospect. And suddenly this thing came up at Cornell and I grabbed and I didn't even have my PhD at the time. So I struggled through my PhD. And at that time people, they gave jobs to people that didn't have their PhD. And I wasn't even, I hadn't even written the dissertation. But I wrote my dissertation and
while
at the same
here.
Time, while my first year, I was instructing and I was writing into, I was.
That's a workload, yeah.
And I and we had the our first baby at the same time.
Oh, geez,
but
yeah.
I got everything: my PhD and my baby and my, and I became legal.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, you were an instructor when you before you had your PhD. Then I became an assistant professor, and then they put me on the tenure track, and somehow,
so
somebody made a mistake and kept me on.
Yeah,
so that's how I got here.
I think the Southeast Asia program was kind of just taking off at that time, yeah?
Well, actually it took off. It started back in 52, 53, when I was an undergraduate. I remember that they had, Professor Eccles had come here and was offering Indonesian. I thought, God, what? How exotic. How exotic. But, when I came in, we had our first Southeast Asia meeting, and we at that time we would meet in the Statler Hotel, and we had a little room, just a very small room, and there was a table, and I went in, is this where I'm supposed to go? And there was Kayan, and of course I recognized Kayan Gole, and who else was there? I think, Jones was there, R.B. Jones. I think that's all the people that were there. And so I was the four of us. That was the Southeast Asia program meeting. But very soon thereafter, we got Stanley O'Connor a year later. Yeah. And we got, and Oliver Walters, I think, was already in the pipeline at that point.
Okay.
Oh, we had, I think Professor Johns, is his name Johns?
Johns.
The historian. The one that wrote what the, from his, he was an ex, actually, he had served in Burma. What was his name?
Oh, my mind's blank right now.
Well, anyway, whatever.
Wyatt? David Wyatt?
No, David Wyatt,
huh?
No. He was like 70 years old already.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'm not sure.
He wrote the big textbook for the history of, I guess, in
all
the 60s.
All I can think of, Lauriston Sharp and
no, Lauriston Sharp was on leave at the time.
Oh, okay.
So that's why we didn't have an anthropologist at the table.
Okay.
He came the next year. But anyway, there was this British scholar, historian, and he was a visitor. He was constantly here. He was a really nice guy.
Okay.
And everybody got mad at him because he gave all the students an A. He was a sweetheart, but he was also a very sharp person. I mean, he was a very good historian. and Oliver Walters was a student.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he left, and Oliver came on board maybe the next year or the year after that.
Mm-hmm.
Stan O'Connor came on. They had a large, they had a big problem getting him on, but they finally got him through the arts, history of art department. Mm-hmm. And Jim Siegel came fairly shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm. And so so the first meeting, there were four people, so I imagine it grew pretty quickly after that, the next few years.
Well, it goes slowly, slowly, bit by bit, yeah. It didn't go fast.
And so what courses were you teaching when you first started?
When I first started, well, I was actually in the linguistics department.
Okay.
So I taught Indonesian courses, but Professor Eccles did too. Okay. But he also had other courses in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And in the linguistics department, they had people do like the introduction to linguistics,
mm-hmm.
or it was shifted around different people in the department. Or phonology. One semester I taught phonology.
Okay.
And I taught more something called morphology, which they stopped teaching after I mm-hmm. after I was in it. And then later on, I taught sociolinguistics because
mm-hmm.
that's what really interested me.
Sure.
And the history of historical linguistics, that mm-hmm. was my interest. Those are my two interests.
Mm-hmm. And you were teaching Indonesian at the time?
I always had courses in Indonesian.
Were many students taking it back then?
Quite a number. Yeah, we had very good enrollments in Indonesia because a lot. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Strange, because you couldn't go to Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
It was confrontasi, and it was practically impossible to get a visa, and the situation when I went to Indonesia after I was in the Philippines, I passed through Indonesia with my wife, and the situation was just dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Jogja, and the people from the Gunung Kidul, mm-hmm. the southern, they were starving, and they were swarming into the city, and it was absolutely chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
Quite interesting situation.
Yeah.
And when I went to Bali, it was the same situation. Mm-hmm. Mount Agung had just erupted and people were starving. It was a terrible, terrible situation. And everything, the inflation was completely mm-hmm. out of the...
Food must have been...
We bought it. Actually, you were not allowed to do so, but we went, you had to go through Singapore. And we got black market money in Singapore, which my wife stuffed in her brassiere and in her every place, and I had all over the place. And when we got off the plane, since my wife's Filipino, they thought she was Chinese.
Mm.
And they said, she wanted to go to the bathroom, and she spoke a little Indonesian. And this lady said, come with me. And she thought she was being taken to the bathroom, but she was just taken to a room with nothing. And the lady said, undress. And when I saw this, I saw it was a policewoman taking her. I said, where are you taking my wife? I said, she's not an Indonesian citizen. And so they let her go, but I was scared because she had all kinds of black market money.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we had $50 that we changed in Singapore, and it was enough money to last us our 2 weeks in Indonesia. It was like that.
Mm.
I mean, it was things cost nothing. If you had your black market money,
mm-hmm.
if it was expensive, if you did it legally,
mm-hmm.
but it was very cheap. So anyway,
wow, what a fascinating time to be.
It was a fascinating time to be in Indonesia, and then
mm-hmm.
right after that, konfrontasi, and
mm-hmm.
I think Americans didn't even go there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's
interesting that enrollments were still up in the.
Yeah,
I
can't remember
courses.
Why it was.
Mm-hmm.
Why it was.
Did you have any students that went on to teach at Cornell? Did you teach, like with Ben Anderson or those sort of folks in your classes?
Well, Ben Anderson was a student here before I was there.
Oh, he's, okay, so he...
Before I was there.
That's right, I guess he started here in the early mid-60s.
No, I don't think so. Well, Tuck.
Oh, yeah?
He took Indonesian, but he came as a graduate student
mm-hmm.
in political science.
Yeah.
And then he went back to Bangkok and taught there for a while before I came back.
Oh, okay.
So that's the one person that was taking Indonesian with me in those days
mm-hmm.
that went on to join the faculty.
Mm-hmm. And so...
Funny, Oliver Walters always said he wanted to take Indonesian.
mm-hmm. He never did?
No.
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 Mm-hmm.
I gave him some a little book I wrote once on Indonesia for tourists, and he used that.
Mm-hmm. And so your book was on, your first book was on linguistics in the Philippines, right? Is that from your dissertation?
My thesis was on the Cebuano language.
Cebuano, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of my articles were about Philippines, or mm-hmm. about the history of the languages, and the languages of the Philippines mm-hmm. have a lot to do. Mm-hmm. Give a lot of information on the history of the languages.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you spend a lot of time in the Philippines when you were for your research, for your dissertation?
Yes, because I wrote a dictionary, and I was doing this. The reason I went, the way I went there is, they asked me to write a grammar of the Cebuano language. Mm-hmm. I was going to do my dissertation on Cebuano, and the government said they had needed a grammar, so they asked me to write a reference grammar of Cebuano.
Okay.
So I sort of made a dissertation, and then I sort of added a lot of other stuff for mm-hmm. the grammar. Mm-hmm. So that I did that, and then they also asked me to make Cebuano lessons. So that's what kept me. That's mm-hmm. what funded my research, so to speak. But
sure.
then I got a big file of words, and I thought, well, why don't I write a dictionary? Mm-hmm. I had no idea what was involved. Well, I'm glad I did it, because
yeah.
I learned an awful lot from writing a dictionary, and I mm-hmm. learned a lot about the culture.
It's an incredible amount of work, I imagine.
Oh, it was absolutely horrendous, because mm-hmm. I always did this by contract, and so I had a time. I said, at the end of this time, I will present this. So mm-hmm. so, and I said, at the end of the time, at the end of the contract, I will present a dictionary ready for publication. Hmm. I mean, a photo-ready copy of that can be just printed,
mm-hmm. sure.
which I did. But I had it practically the last couple of months I was working on it. I had it just about work around the clock.
Sure. And did you have to manage a lot of people to help out with that, or?
Yeah. They gave me a lot of money. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and a little bit of money went a long way in the Philippines mm-hmm. because salaries were very low.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Where were you based in the Philippines?
In Cebu.
Okay.
Cebu. I stayed in Cebu City. I mean, I did a lot of traveling around the area,
sure.
but basically I would hire a house, and I would rent a house, and mm-hmm. then set up shop in the house and have this project going.
Mm-hmm. What was travel like, getting back and forth from the U.S. to Cebu back then?
How was it?
How did you travel? Like, where did the flights go?
The flights, well, in the beginning, you had to go through Hawaii.
Okay.
Or Alaska. Mm-hmm. Well, at some point, we started going through Alaska.
Okay.
But first, it was through Hawaii, and it was quite a long thing. In fact, mm-hmm. the first time I went to the Philippines, you had to stop in Wake Island as well, or mm-hmm. Midway Island. You stopped twice. Mm-hmm. In fact, that went on until the 70s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had to stop twice. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, three times, because you went from the East Coast to the West Coast, then you went
sure.
to Hawaii, then you went to Wake Island, then you went to Tokyo, and then you went to Hong Kong, and then you went to the Philippines. But usually I would stop along the way. I stopped in Hong Kong to buy. At that time, you couldn't buy things. What you needed, you could buy only in Hong Kong.
Okay, sure.
So I bought it in Hong Kong, then I'd bring it to... Mm-hmm.
Do you need to answer the phone? Okay.
Call from...
And
wait a minute, let's see, who's it from?
Irma or Ema?
Call from Wolf, Erna.
Erna Wolf?
It's my daughter.
So when did you have your children?
My first Erna was, the one that's calling now, was born 52 years ago. 1960,
okay.
Is that 50? No, 51 years ago.
Okay.
1964.
Okay, so she was born right after you started at Cornell then, when you were finishing
right,
your dissertation.
Right, my first year, at the end of my first year, mm-hmm. Erna came along, and I was just finishing my thesis and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So then... We had another baby right away, the doctor said. First place I met Mrs. What's her name? Skinner. She's mm-hmm. still here. We met her in the supermarket, and she stopped us because we had just come from Indonesia. We were playing we were sort of fooling around speaking Indonesian to each other, mm-hmm. and she heard us, and so she stopped. And she stopped us in the supermarket. John Skinner's wife at that time, they separated later, and he went off to Stanford, mm-hmm. but she's still here. But anyway, she said, we started talking, she said she had had four children, and they were four boys, and they all came one after another, right in a row. And she says, have all your children, have all your children right away and you get it over with. So I thought that was a good I thought that was a good idea. So we had Rebecca 1 year after Erna, and then we had Sarah 1.5 years after Erna, and then we had John, my youngest, 1.5 years after that. So all of our children were very close.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I would never do it like that again.
Yeah.
Because one time we had 3 children in diapers.
Oh man, that's incredible.
I mean, they were so close.
A ton of work.
It was, and at that time they didn't use Pampers much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they were available, but I wouldn't dream of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
First place, were expensive, and
yep.
Second place, I'm just, you know, what mm-hmm. we would do is we would just boil the.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even have a washing machine. We lived in an apartment the first year, and, mm-hmm. and we would just boil the diapers.
Yep.
They were, and the toilet, we already had only one bathroom. And, mm-hmm. and if you wanted to use the bathroom, one thing you'd have to do is you'd have to take the diaper out of the toilet and put it in the pot. I don't know if you know about that.
Oh, we use cloth diapers too, yeah.
Oh, do you?
We don't want to.
And then
a lot
we would boil them. We would boil them, and then we had steam heat in this apartment. So we put the put the diapers on this on the radiators, and they dried real quick.
mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, we have a washing machine. That's a lot easier.
Oh, yes.
We can just toss it in
no,
there.
No, no. If I had. But you know, I thought it was part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I only my first salary was only like $7,000 a year, so I really couldn't afford very much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, things of course were cheaper. My apartment, remember, we had an apartment. The first one was $110, and then I moved to another place. I found it was $95, and I moved $85, and so I decided to take that. I figured I could save the money.
Yeah.
So we moved to save $15 a month or $20, whatever it was. $25 a month.
Mm-hmm. And so that was $7,000 as an instructor when you first started, or
yeah,
as an assistant?
Yeah. I can't remember exactly
sure.
what it was, but it was around $7,000.
Yeah.
But luckily, I've always had employment in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the Southeast Asia program had the policy of, if you weren't employed, they would give you something for research.
Oh, okay.
So it was like a summer salary.
So CEEP had the money at the time to be able to pay professors some money in the summertime.
Yeah,
so.
Nice. Those that didn't work, they got some. But I worked.
Mm-hmm. Who was writing most of the grants for CEEP at that time? Was it a group effort amongst the professors? Or?
No. Most of it was done by, I think, Laurie Sharp and George Kahn sort of set it up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kahn did a lot. Kahn had a big name. And
mm-hmm,
he was
sure.
well known. I remember he debated McGeorge Bundy. What was his name? George McBundy? What
mm-hmm.
was his name? The guy from Vietnam. The guy that was really responsible for a large part of our Vietnamese
sure.
policy.
Yeah.
Large part of the Vietnam debacle.
Mm-hmm.
So he debated him, and I thought that was pretty. You know, here's a great big man on the top,
mm-hmm.
powerful guy, and little old professor goes up there and debates them.
Yeah, academics don't have that kind of access, I think, to people like that anymore, like higher up political figures, you know. And I look at pictures of George Kahn with you know, Sukarno and people like that, you know.
Oh yeah, of course.
And
well, Kahn was unusual because he was a guy from the West that was really taking the side of the Indonesian Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't very many of them. Most of them mm-hmm. were. I mean, they were all Dutch, and,
mm-hmm,
all,
sure.
all for the Dutch, and they really thought the Dutch ought to go back.
Mm-hmm.
But Kahn was definitely much, very much convinced that Indonesia's for the Indonesian, the Indonesia's for the Indonesians, not for
sure.
the Dutch.
Yep.
So it was considered sort of almost communist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so did the brown bag series, the lecture series on Thursdays, did that still go
on? That was going on all the time I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the time I came. Mm-hmm. Always had a, it was usually Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
It was down at the old 102 West Avenue.
Okay.
And it stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great thing for me. It's, you know, when I was coming in, I came from Yale and I'd studied Indo-European linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know, and even though I took that one semester of in Southeast Asian geography with Pelzer, I knew scant, very little. The education was very, mm-hmm. very, very much linguistic
sure.
that I had. And so my education on Southeast Asia was came here, and the brown bags were a big thing.
Yeah.
And I also would go to the, they always had a seminar. a country seminar.
Okay.
Every semester, and the students were obliged to go.
Mm-hmm. Were they taught?
I would go when it was Indonesia and the Philippines. Okay, I went to all of those.
Who generally taught those, if it was the Philippines or Indonesian?
Indonesia, Philippines was always Gole, and okay. Indonesia was Kan.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great when Kan did it, because he got all kinds of people. Well, also Clara Holt was around,
mm-hmm.
and so she went to all those things.
Okay.
And she had a lot to say.
Mm-hmm.
She was an interesting person.
Mm-hmm. Clara Holt? I'm not sure I know. I don't know about Clara Holt.
Well, Clara Holt?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know how it is she came to Cornell, but she was also teaching Indonesian at some point.
Okay.
Clara Holt was actually, her background is she's actually a Russian Jewish, from a Russian Jewish family, and grew up in Riga. And Kaya McGowan has written a biography, I think, of this.
Oh, really?
Woman.
Oh, okay.
She was a very, very educated person, became an expert in Indonesian art.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote a book, which I think was... published by Cornell,
okay.
Art in Indonesia. She also wrote on Indonesian dance.
So was she in the art history department, or is she in...
No, she was never a professor.
Oh,
she
sure,
didn't
okay.
have any kind of... I mean, she was educated,
mm-hmm.
and she knew
mm-hmm.
lots more than most professors,
sure.
but she didn't have any kind of postgraduate degree.
Okay, sure.
She went to Indonesia in the Dutch days,
mm-hmm.
in the colonial days. And
she was just living in Ithaca and attended many of these...
Yeah, she came to Cornell because she was invited to come here.
Oh, okay.
I guess she had come to Cornell. I don't know how she got from Indonesia. She went to maybe from the Dutch East Indies. I think she went to Washington to work for the State Department. I really don't know too much. You'll have to ask Kaya. Actually, you should... Talk to Kaya about Clara Holt.
Sounds fascinating.
And she loved Ben. Ben Anderson was a
mm-hmm.
great, great friend of hers.
Mm-hmm. And Ben was a professor at that time, right? When he started, I think.
Oh, when
mid-60s.
He first when he came here, he was still doing finishing his PhD.
Okay.
Remember, he impressed me a lot because there was an Indonesian person from the High Muckety Muck from Indonesia that's. Came through here named Room, I think his name was Room, and Ben talked to him in Javanese.
Oh.
I was very impressed by that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Ben was great at languages, and
mm-hmm.
he picked up all kinds of languages,
mm-hmm.
including Japanese.
Mm-hmm. And so you focused on has there been a strong focus on the Philippines, or has that changed over your time at Cornell?
Philippines?
Yeah, on the Philippines. I feel like Thailand and Indonesia have had a strong
we
history.
We don't really... We after Gole left, I don't remember that we got anybody that was really Philippine-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the when we do Philippines as a country seminar, and after Gole retired, they usually brought in other people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a lot of these country seminars were done by visitors. I remember Ruth McVeigh was here a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I don't know if she ever ran a course, but she was often given lectures here.
Okay. But she was never a professor here, right? Was she a visiting
scholar? No,
she
was, actually, she was a professor in England somewhere. She was,
okay.
She had a, well, I mean, they call that lecture in England.
Mm-hmm.
She was a lecturer in some place in England.
And, okay.
But she was around a lot, and she was a great resource for the people that were here.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I learned a lot from her.
Sure.
Yeah.
So was there a certain regional emphasis when you back in the 60s and 70s when you were here, or
regional emphasis?
Like were they trying to push? Was the Southeast Asia program trying to push people to study certain regions or?
They weren't pushing people to study anything,
mm-hmm.
but Thailand and Indonesia is the one that sort
mm-hmm.
of. Well, we had lots of people that were in. We had several people that were in Thai,
mm-hmm.
who were interested in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
Burma
sure.
never really took off.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're trying to push it, but
mm-hmm.
we never had a lot of work in Burma.
Mm-hmm.
And Cambodia is only in recent times,
mm-hmm.
only after the... In the early days, we had Cambodian language, but we didn't really have Khmer language, but we didn't have anybody who's special. Oh, we got somebody, but we got one person that was a specialist in Cambodia, a linguist, but he was when I say dead, he was dead meat. I mean, he was completely a waste of time because he didn't teach any students and he didn't give any courses. Deflot. I don't know if anybody mentioned him, but he came at some point. And he was at the University of Chicago, and the University of Chicago people congratulated themselves that they got rid of him because he came here. But he, one day he just decided he would leave. He left, boom, walked off. Left all his books, left everything.
Really?
And
so
left,
strange.
Also his wife. He left his wife and all his books, and he disappeared. Went off to Cambodia. Anyway, that's another story.
Yeah. So what did some of your students study here, like your graduate students who came to linguistics?
In
linguistics.
Well, I had quite a number. I had several from Indonesia. They went back to Indonesia and they became this and that in Indonesia. And then I had, trying to think of who my graduate students were. I had some actually that went ahead and became Indonesian teachers of Indonesian. In Australia.
Okay.
Became professors of Indonesia, heads of, you know, programs in Indonesia. I'm just trying to remember who all was here. God.
Yeah, no, it's no problem.
I'm jumping over. I also introduced Tagalog.
Okay.
I mean, a couple of years after I came here, I introduced Tagalog.
So you taught Indonesian and Tagalog?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
I know you have both books on both, teaching books on Indonesia.
Yeah, I have pedagogy. I thought that one thing I'm supposed to do is I'm supposed to make pedagogical materials. And I did that almost my entire career at all, materials at all level for Tagalog. Cebuano, we introduced a course in Cebuano, and we'd actually had some students, but it wasn't a big thing. And but Tagalog, I had to write a textbook for that because the textbook we had was terrible. And Indonesian, I did all kinds, and Japanese. I never made a textbook, but I lots and lots of materials. We made lots. We kept making more materials and different things and trying different, very difficult language to teach.
Sure.
I mean,
so have you spent a lot of time in Indonesia as well when you were putting together the textbooks?
We had this program abroad, which you took.
The Koti?
Koti program. It became Kotim because 1 year we had to go to Malaysia.
That's when I was, it was Kotim when I participated.
Oh, I see. But
I
it was,
they changed
was
it the year after.
Was it in Manado or where was it?
It was in Salatiga at the time.
Oh, Salatiga.
It was Manado the year after I finished. Yeah, the year after.
They moved back to Manado?
I think
no,
so,
what
yeah.
year were you in Salatiga?
I was there in 2008.
Oh, they moved back to Salatiga once. We were in Salatiga and we left Salatiga. We were at Satya Wachan, and I guess it was back to Satya. Oh, I know, that's because, what's his name? Peter Sukar.
What's his name? Yes, I know who you're talking about, yes.
You know the guy?
Yes.
Anyway, he joined the program when I was in Salatiga.
Okay.
And I got him a fellowship, I got him a teaching assistantship at OU.
Oh, okay.
And he went on and got a PhD. And,
at Ohio University,
yeah, he went on and got a PhD. He's a smart guy, smart kid. And then he got a job in Arizona, and then he was in the group that did this Indonesia abroad. And he convinced them to go to Salatiga. I wasn't very pleased with Salatiga. I didn't like the cooperation was poor.
Really.
Well, I mean, they tried to take it over. They wanted to do it their way.
Okay.
And that was the big thing. I mean, I had my way of, I had my curriculum. And they wanted to impose their curriculum. And it was a struggle. And so we left the place. We went to Mala.
Sure.
But then they went back after Suwarno.
Okay, yes.
Suwarno. After Suwarno, after Suwarno, because Suwarno was from there. I mean, he was not from there, but he had gone to Satya Wachana.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I think that's most of the questions I have. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, it's been fun to talk. I'm afraid I'm very disjointed and jumping from here to jumping from there.
No, this has been fun. It's been a really nice conversation. I mean, mostly
you can make anything out of it.
And, yeah, mostly
you can always come back and try to make. tell me if you have little notes and something. I try to make sense out of it, mm-hmm. put it into some kind of context.
No, this has been great.
I remember this and I remember that.
No, I'm just fascinated with that period of time in the early 60s. I think there's a lot of people coming to Cornell at that time to study Southeast Asia and professors.
Because we were really it at that time. I mean, mm-hmm. Washington really hadn't gotten off. Hawaii was kind of very mm-hmm. weak at that time. Mm-hmm. Yale was doing more at that time, mm-hmm. and they had somebody in Cambodian. Mm-hmm. That was really strong. I mean,
who was teaching the Indonesian summer programs at Cornell and Yale? You said they switched back and forth. Who was teaching it at that time? Do you remember? It seems like a long time ago for people to be teaching Indonesian. That's fascinating to me.
Indonesian was taught at Yale starting in 1948.
Oh, really? Okay, so that's really early on, yeah.
Very early
was
on.
Was it in Cornell who taught it, or is it?
No, it was, well, I mean, he had Indonesian assist. He always had Indonesians that would do that. The system was always, there would be a linguist that was kind of set up the curriculum and mm-hmm. do the grammar, and then they would have somebody who was a native speaker who sort of did the drilling and mm-hmm. did the real talking.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. lots of people that were in charge of these programs mm-hmm. didn't really know that much, know mm-hmm. the language that well.
Sure.
Yeah.
How did you teach it at Cornell when you first started? Were you the sole instructor?
And No. I always had native speakers. My first person was Tunggul Siagian, mm-hmm. who was the same age as me, and I told him this is what we got to do, and he didn't like that. He didn't like to be told. He wanted to do it his own way, so mm-hmm. we didn't get along too well.
Were they graduate students or were they instructors?
Tunggul was. I guess he was enrolled. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. There were some that were. I remember that Omar Khayyam's wife was just the wife of a mm-hmm. person that was a grad student.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So we had people like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It got very difficult to find the right person in the mm-hmm. days of Konfrontasi, because we had most of the Indonesians that were in this country were told to go home, and only those that didn't decided not to go home were the ones that. Were the ones that could teach, and I was wondering who would we use, mm-hmm. but
that's right. Suharto recalled everybody, didn't he?
He recalled everybody.
Asia. Yeah.
And the funny thing is, there was this Supomo, this Javanese fellow, mm-hmm. This was 1964, mm-hmm. and he had been offered somebody from our department had met him and offered him a chance to come to Cornell. Mm-hmm. And it was still at a time when they were letting people go. Mm-hmm. And he got to the airport, and he was about to leave, and the loudspeaker said, called his name, Supomo, Saudara Supomo, di minta untuk menghadap, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he just ignored it, because they were also telling him to board, and he just boarded.
Snuck right out, huh?
Yeah. Well, it was a little bit unfortunate because his wife was left home. Then his wife came the following year with the children, mm-hmm. and she died. I was in the Philippines at the time.
Yeah. In Ithaca?
In Ithaca, yes. And so he became he was a widower with two children, and so he went back, he took off, and took a leave of absence, brought his children home, mm-hmm. and then he came back again. Mm-hmm. And then he got married to one of the other students.
So was there a lot of funding back then for study in the Philippines when you were traveling back and forth? Was there grants outside of Cornell?
Oh, yes, there was lots of chances. Mm-hmm. There was the Fulbright. Fulbright mm-hmm. was a very good program.
Okay.
They had graduate, they had, for faculty, they had, I can't remember what all I got. Mm-hmm. And then one thing that would fund me is I had these projects. Mm-hmm. That I would say, I'll prepare a dictionary, I will prepare lessons, I will prepare this, and I would build and travel. Mm-hmm. So that way I got a chance to travel.
Okay.
Then the Ford Foundation 1 year mm-hmm. funded me to do it. I did a study on the Javanese speech levels with Supomo, together with the student. That mm-hmm. At that, he'd already finished his PhD, and he was back home in Indonesia, and we did a mm-hmm. joint project on Javanese speech levels. Mm-hmm. which for me was very instructive because I learned a lot about how sociolinguistics from doing this.
Oh, sure.
And it really enriched my course.
Mm-hmm. Was there a linguist for the mainland at that point?
Linguist for the mainland? Yeah, yeah. Albie Jones.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so Albie Jones was in charge of what was his main country of focus? Was it Thailand or
Burma, I would say. But no, he also knew about Vietnam. He mm-hmm. also knew about Vietnamese and about Thai, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he was in charge of those Burmese, Thai, and mm-hmm. actually, I don't think he was ever in charge of Vietnamese. But
okay.
I know that his research involved Vietnamese language.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if during the Vietnam War period, if there was an increase in the study of Vietnamese language.
Or oh, yes. They played a big role. We got other people.
Okay.
We got another professor in Vietnamese
okay.
at that time. Yeah, mm-hmm. can't remember his name.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, I know what he looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and there was somebody who was just specialized in Vietnamese that came over.
Mm-hmm. That's, so did they create a position specifically for Vietnamese during that time?
At that time, yes. Yeah, they did, yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in the linguistics department.
Or okay.
It was called Modern Languages and Linguistics.
Okay.
So it was both language teaching and linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days of linguistics and the linguistics of the early times,
mm-hmm.
it was much more language teaching oriented. It was
mm-hmm.
considered that linguists was also was interested in language teaching.
Okay, sure.
That changed. It became very theoretical with mm-hmm. the so-called Chomsky revolution.
Yep, sure.
So there was really a big split in linguistics. Those that were interested in linguistics and language teaching and
mm-hmm.
practical things and structural things and
mm-hmm.
sociolinguistics and those that looked at linguistics as kind of a philosophy type thing or
sure.
mathematic type thing and
mm-hmm.
and or psychological type thing and
mm-hmm.
and so there's a big split.
Mm-hmm.
They became the theoretical linguists.
Yes, I'm sure Abby's experience teaching here, Abby Cohn's experience teaching here, is much different than yours. Yeah, I think that. It's
oh yes, absolutely.
Much.
She was
so
a very different,
years,
very
yes.
different kind of department.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very. When she came, by the time she came, and she herself was very interested in very technical things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, were you the first Indonesian instructor at Cornell?
No. John Eccles was here.
Oh, Eccles was before you. Oh, okay.
But yeah. Eccles was doing so many other things. He was doing
yeah.
that, and he was also responsible for. I mean, he took responsibility for building up the library.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a fantastic collection in
mm-hmm.
Southeast Asian studies, and that was Eccles.
Mm-hmm.
He spent most of his time on that collection.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they call it the Eccles
collection. Yeah,
but
incredible.
He had been brought here actually from the State Department to teach linguistics,
okay.
to teach Indonesian stuff, and also he had to also teach courses in linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
So he did all those things.
Yeah, but. I think there were quite a few people who came from government, from D.C. to
Cornell at that time.
At that time, it's
sure,
fascinating.
Sure, I mean, I think
how...
even Marston Sharp was originally.
I think Stanley O'Connor, too, he mentioned that he was working in Washington before coming here.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, but he's a little different because I think he, I don't, have never asked him, but I think he got interested in the history of art
mm-hmm.
after his government.
After, it was completely, it was
yeah.
a change.
So he was not, he was a young, he was actually... Although he began as an assistant professor after me, he was actually 3 or 4 years older than I was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Well, I think that's good for now. And then when I assess these, when I go through and work through these videos, I'll if I have any other questions, I'll get.
Oh boy, I feel so embarrassed because I don't think I did it. I think I jumped mm-hmm. all over the place.
Oh no, it's fine. No problem at all. I think it was great.
Whatever
this is a fun conversation.
To come to my mind, I suddenly talk about that.
Yeah.
It was bad.
No, not at all. No, that was a fun conversation.
Yeah,
I really enjoy just talking to people.
Well, you're very sweet. Thanks.
This has been a fun project.
Yeah.
And,
okay, well, I think you'll have fun talking to... Mm-hmm. I think you'll have a lot of fun talking to Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he opens up and tells you all the gossip, that's...
Well, I had a lot of fun on a Philippines note, I had a lot of fun talking to Randy Barker. He spent a lot of time there.
Randy, of course, is Randy is not one of the, he's one of the older people. He's my
yeah.
age, but he was really not connected with Southeast Asia until much later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the program.
The
until
program.
Quite late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think he spent a lot of time at Erie at the Rice Institute.
Right.
Or 13
right,
or 15
right.
years, or incredible
that's
experiences.
Correct. Yeah. So he didn't really start coming here and into the program until the 80s or so. Mm-hmm. Must have been the 80s.
Yeah, but I think that's what makes the program so fascinating, is so many different backgrounds of
yeah, well, we've had some people, we had some really interesting people. Some people came through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were a lot of, they died. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you can't.
Sure. We have a lot of videos of, so that's why we're doing the second round. The first round, the videos and interviews, was taken in 1993 with Lawrence and Sharp.
Barnett and Knight Biggerstaff. Sharp and Knight. Well, yep. Knight was not part of the Southeast Asia. He was East Asia.
Mm-hmm. And then Milton Barnett.
But Barnett was George Kahan. And Barnett was, then we really got into the Philippines when Barnett mm-hmm. came. I mean, Barnett, of course, was all over the place in Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. but he knew a lot, he spent a lot of time in the Philippines, mm-hmm. and a lot of his students. Well, we got a lot of students from up where your wife's mm-hmm. studying. We got a lot of students from up there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In West Java? In development sociology.
I mean rural sociology.
Yes, rural sociology, yes.
Yeah, we got a lot of, and we had actually a lot of faculty, Barnett, and there were other people too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, you want to go. It is time to go.
Time is it? Oh, it's almost six, yeah. But thank you so much again. This was great. I really enjoyed it.
Well, Matt, you're very fun to talk to.
Especially for as chaotic as I think it sounds.